喂呀哟，喂呀哎呀哟，喂呀哟哟，咿呀耶耶哟喂，喂呀哟。
William Clark, October 12, 1804. The Arikaras are about 500 men able to bear arms, and the remains of 10 different tribes reduced by smallpox and wars with the Sioux. Their men tall and well proportioned, their women small and industrious. They raise great quantities of corn, beans, etc., also tobacco for the men to smoke. Their houses are close together, and towns enclosed with pickets. Their lodges are 30 to 40 feet in diameter, covered with earth on neat poles set endwise.
Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai. It was October. Ice frosted the trees in the morning. Lewis and Clark pushed up the Missouri, leaving the territory of the Teton Sioux. They approached an island near the mouth of the Grand River, covered with fields of corn, beans, and squash. Curious people lined the bank. Behind them rose a village of about 60 large earthen lodges. This was the first of the three villages of the Saanish, or the Arikara. Most Americans think of the Plains Indians as nomadic buffalo hunters like the Sioux horsemen portrayed in our last program. The Arikara, and really the vast majority of the Indians along the Missouri, lived in villages and raised crops. Early in the summer, they would move onto the prairie to hunt buffalo, returning in time for the harvest. Not 30 years before the Corps of Discovery, the Arikara numbered 20,000 or 30,000 and lived in dozens of villages along the Missouri. In the 1780s, a series of devastating smallpox epidemics raged through the valley, killing tens of thousands of Indians. By 1804, the remnants of the Arikara clustered into what historian James Rhonda calls refugee towns. Imagine living in a country that suddenly loses 75% of its population, mostly children and elders. As Lewis and Clark prepared to counsel with the elders, they knew that the Arikara villages formed one of the most important trading centers in the region. In exchange for Arikara corn and other foods, the Teton Sioux brought manufactured goods from the east. The Cheyenne, Arapaho, and other Central Plains tribes brought buffalo meat, horses, and goods from the Spanish South. Virgil Chase.
And when Lewis and Clark and them come on up, they brought liquor to the Indians, you know. We had a chief named Gray Eyes, and he asked, "Why do you call us your friend when you give us the stuff that makes us act foolish?" And that's been the downfall of our people ever since, was alcoholism.
The Arikara position as key Missouri River traders was not to last. Within 20 years, their villages were destroyed in the first incursion of the U.S. Army onto the plains, and they became refugees again, eventually taking up life with the Mandan further up the river. The Arikara live on the Fort Berthold Reservation along with the Mandan and Hidatsa tribes. The Grand River village sites visited by Lewis and Clark now are covered by the Owyhee Reservoir. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Passage of time can dry rivers, collapse trees, even crumble mountains. But for Arikara tribal members, Rodney Hollenwolf and Virgil Chase, it can also build and strengthen a friendship. Both Rodney and Virgil recollect growing up together in North Dakota's Indian country, attending ceremonies, learning oral history from elders, and even finding their hometown swallowed up by flood. The men know that while much of their childhood now lies underwater, their trust and respect for one another is everlasting. Brian Bull has more.
Rodney Hellingwolf lives in a small house in Newtown, North Dakota. The grassy bluffs host a number of cabins, grain towers, and a casino. Hellingwolf's childhood pal, Virgil Chase, helps himself to another cup of black coffee. He tilts his thick leather hat over his silverish locks and listens to Hellingwolf discuss his lineage.
Now, my name is Rodney Hellingwolf. I'm 64 years old. I'm from Whiteshield, North Dakota. I belong to the Rickaraw tribe. My mother was Mabel Bear Hellingwolf. My father was Dan Hellingwolf. My grandfather was Lawrence Hellingwolf. And my grandfather, Lawrence, was a minister, one of the first ministers on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation. And he preached at a congregational church in Nisho before we got flooded out. Virgil and I, we lived down in Nisho before this dam came.
Chase puts his coffee mug down and recalls his own relatives.
My name is Virgil Chase, Sr. My father was Frank Chase. He was a Mandan Hidatsa Sioux. My mother's side, she was the daughter of Red Bear. Red Bear was a scout. Immediately after his father's death, Red Bear went through the Sundance torture in order to be his father's representative. He enlisted at Fort Stevenson in 1872.
Hellingwolf also has a scout in the family, who served as one of the Old West's most familiar figures.
The first veteran in my family was Hellingwolf. He was a scout for Custer. He was at that Little Bighorn. They said that Diddy wanted him to go because his horse was poor, but he went anyway. And he went on that other expedition to the Black Hills.
Hellingwolf says Custer promised provisions and aid to the Arikaras if they helped him in a search for gold in the Black Hills.
My grandfather used to tell me that the Black Hills belonged to the Rickaraw at one time, and that the Sioux overran us, overpowered us, and then we had to go back east again. My grandpa, his name was Ralph Wells, Sr. He said when them scouts had that gold, they decorated their horses with that gold, and they come into camp where Custer was, and Custer almost had a heart attack. He seen that gold, so he wanted to know where they got it. Our people went and showed him. And then they said they fill up a satchel full of gold for us, just the Rickaraw tribe, no other tribe, just us. We never were paid for that gold. It's supposed to be in the Smithsonian Institute yet.
Gold was found in the Black Hills, and settlers poured into the region by the thousands. The Sioux nations and other bands would retaliate against Custer in the bloody Battle of the Little Bighorn in 1876, but life was forever changed for the Indian people. Following the close of the Indian Wars, the reservation system was imposed on tribes. Many struggled to retain their culture despite efforts to eradicate it. Both Chase and Hellingwolf say as children, they weren't always able to attend or remember the traditional ceremonies practiced by their relatives. But Chase does recall a prophecy passed on to him by his grandmother.
She passed away in 1949, so all of what she'd seen hadn't come to pass yet. But she said, Nixcotid was my Indian name, Black Eagle, at that time. She always said, you know, Black Eagle, there's a time coming. This Missouri River that you see, it was brown, you know, and it was fierce. But she said there's a time coming when that water would run backwards and turn blue. And when that water did, as greedy and as fierce a fighter as the magpie bird is, there was white birds coming, just like the white people were coming. And they were going to drive out the magpie, and they would take over this area. It would be laden with white birds, but she didn't know what they were. And at that time, when the water runs backwards and turns blue, there was a generation coming. I would be an old man by that time. And that generation that's coming, she said, they would not know their tongue, nor would they know their culture or their ways. For instance, if an old person fell or something, they'd all laugh and push him down. They had no respect for one another. They had no respect for the female of the people. They would fight them and so forth. And see, now that generation is here now. Because no one knows anything anymore. No one cares. No one has respect for one another. And see, how did my grandmother know that? And everything has come to pass now. You look at the whole world is out of balance.
Chase recalls how parts of the Arikara tradition began to fade among the tribe. He says many clans were disappearing because the younger people didn't care to learn and practice the ceremonial ways. He remembers the Bison Bear clan attending one final gathering in 1946, where many other representatives were missing.
And it was pitiful. Everyone was crying. I was a little guy sitting by my grandma's knees. And I'd try to get tired and I'd try to sleep, and she'd hit me to stay awake, she'd shake me and watch. And I'm glad she did, because I seen all the items that was on display there, and then all the empty spots between where the clans were no longer there.
Adding to the loss of ceremonial practices and clans, Arikara residents of Nishu saw their town lost a dam development on the river. Chase remembers how his mother fought to save a remnant to their community during the town's evacuation.
Everyone was leaving and crying. Some of the old people didn't want to go. And we got ready to go, and Mom said to stop at the ceremonial hall. She didn't want to forget the stone, the medicine stone. We stopped there to get it, and my brothers got off and started to try to pick it up, but they couldn't pick it up. It was pretty heavy to lift it, you know. So Mom went back, and she had a bad knee. She was on a cane. She was elderly. But then I noticed she talked to that stone in a different language. It was a clicking sound. I never did get it. It was a clicking sound. And she patted that rock around and lifted it up with one hand like a feather and put it in the back of the truck. And my brothers looked at each other. None of us said anything.
Chase says for all the suffering, betrayal, and loss the Arikara people have experienced, they are a nation of survivors who will never disappear.
Why? Why are we still here? The reason why is the Creator keeps us here, because we pray. At the beginning of each day, we do our prayers, we offer smoke. At the end of each day, we do our prayers again. And that's what my job is, to go ahead and get the young people interested and make them knowledgeable as to these thoughts.
Both Chase and Howling Wolf know there's a part of Arikara history that won't be coming back. But they say keeping the essence of the tribe alive all comes down to faith and family. Treasures worth more than any gold ripped from the earth. For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is Assistant News Director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce Tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse Skelton talks about the culture of corn. And in Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn explores the music of the Dead Grass Society.
The Great Plains in August stretch like a golden sea of grass across the open land. It is a time of harvest and celebration, a time of renewal.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us.
Nos que no ve.